Hi everyone, I'm Chris Saldana, and this is the National Education Policy Center's Talks Education Podcast. This month, we spoke with Professors Richard Ingersoll and Tuan Nguyen about teacher shortages. Professor Ingersoll is a professor of education and sociology in the University of Pennsylvania's Graduate School of Education. He's a leading expert on America's elementary and secondary teaching force, and his research examines teaching as a job, teachers as employees, and schools as workplaces, from a teacher's pre-employment training through their last day in the classroom. Professor Nguyen is an assistant professor in the College of Education at Kansas State University. His research examines teacher leadership and school improvement, teacher policy and the teacher labor market, and financial aid and post-secondary success. In the first part of this month's episode, Professor Ingersoll helps us understand what a teacher shortage is, what sort of policies have been implemented at the federal and state levels to address teacher shortages, and how the pandemic might further exacerbate America's teacher shortage.
So tell me a little bit about what a teacher shortage is.
Teacher shortages have been a problem for the elementary secondary school system for the last century. And the basic issue is you simply have trouble filling all your classrooms with qualified people. The conventional wisdom has long been that these staffing problems, staffing all your classrooms with qualified, adequately qualified teachers, is the conventional wisdom has been is that we don't make enough new teachers. You might call it a supply side problem. And the conventional wisdom is particularly in the post-war period that we've had these two big demographic trends, increase in student enrollments, in the last 30 years, increase in teacher retirements. These two demographic trends are colliding, and we have significant numbers of schools that simply have trouble filling their positions. Teacher shortages. And the whole connotation is shortages that we're not making enough new teachers. I heard this, it made sense to me. I started doing research on it, looking at the data, and slowly but surely came to the conclusion that this was something of a wrong diagnosis. That yes, we do have schools out there that have trouble filling their positions. We do have that. That's not new. We have national data now going back 30 years to the late 80s showing that. But the cause of it isn't so much that we make too few teachers, it's that we lose too many long before retirement. And so the solution can't simply be to bring more in. We also have to try to improve our retention, because along with the conventional wisdom that we have these shortages because we don't make enough teachers, the prescriptions have been straightforward. And we've had these, you know, dozens of them over the last, you know, many decades. Let's have signing bonuses. Let's have alternative routes to expedite entry into the occupation. Let's have student loan forgiveness. Let's recruit overseas. President Obama, like presidents before him, had a whole teacher recruitment initiative. President Obama's was called 100K in 10. Let's recruit in 10,000 new STEM teachers every year for a decade, 100K. And this was initiated in 2011, I think. Now, there's nothing wrong with persuading math and science majors in college to go into teaching. That's great. But they came to me and I said, look, but the data show that, you know, you want to bring in 10,000 a year. I can show you we're losing 40,000 STEM teachers every year. And most of it's pre-retirement voluntary quitting. And most of that's driven by dissatisfaction. And so, yes, it's fine to have recruitment, but we also need to have retention.
So in your work, when you think about different kinds of school districts that serve different kinds of students, economically disadvantaged versus affluent students, for example, how have teacher shortages played out across those kinds of districts?
It's a great question. And of course, these shortages and teacher turnover, teacher quitting, are not evenly distributed at all. And even within a single school district, you'll have a school that all the teachers want to get into, and you'll have schools that all the teachers want to get out of. I mean, there's a great deal of turnover between schools within school districts. There's I mean, when teachers leave schools, a big part of that is they're getting out of the occupation altogether, but there's an awful lot of cross-school, cross-district moving. Now, some people say, well, they're still a teacher, they're still in the system, there's no net loss, they're not contributing to shortages. That's true at a systemic level. But from the level of the principal in that school, it doesn't matter where they're going, they're part of that principal's staffing problem when they leave, even if they're just going to another school in the same district 15 minutes away. So, you know, all these flows, they're not equally distributed, and they can present a problem if they're chronic and if they're at a high level. For instance, just national data, the annual teacher turnover departure rate in affluent suburban schools is maybe around 10%. On the other hand, the average rate in low-income urban schools or low-income rural is over double that. So, you know, if turnover is the big story behind shortages, and if teacher turnover really varies by types of schools, we can start to see where are these shortages, you know, what kinds of schools and what kinds of subjects. Math and science is always the one where there's the most principals tell us they have openings that are difficult to fill.
You mentioned a set of policies that have already been tried. How successful have those policies been at addressing teacher shortages?
Well, you know, that's the interesting part, because when I first started to study this, and this is back in the 1990s, you know, you quickly realize this is not a new issue. One of my doctoral students did a search, online search. It turns out almost every president since Eisenhower at one point gave a speech on teacher shortages, and all these things were done. And then the question is, well, you know, did they work? I mean, obviously not if this is a perennial issue. And they haven't. Again, there's nothing wrong with recruiting people in, you know, like President Obama's initiative, President Clinton, President Bush, all had similar. But if we don't improve retention, the image that always comes to my mind is pouring water in a bucket with holes in the bottom. You just have to keep pouring teachers in all the time just to keep things even. How about also getting some mud and plugging some of those holes in the bottom of the bucket?
That was even prior to the pandemic, that presence of teacher shortages, that challenge. How do you think the pandemic will exacerbate that? Or do you think it will exacerbate it?
We don't have national data on this, but we have all kinds of indications that stresses and strains have increased dramatically. And I'm talking about K-12 schools and teachers here. And certainly the anecdotal evidence suggests that we've had an upsurge in leaving, both retiring and also quitting, particularly by beginners. Now, you know, because those are the two groups that depart schools the most. It's what we call a U-shaped curve. There's lots and lots of departures those first 5 years on the job. You maybe heard the statistic, we generated this now a couple decades ago, that between 40 and 50% of those who go into teaching are gone within 5 years. And then after that, it slows down. After 5 or 6 years, those who are gonna stay, they stay. And then, of course, in the retirement years, it goes up again. So all indications are is that there's been this upsurge in teacher departures. Now, this did not happen in the beginning of the pandemic. When the pandemic started, I'd get all these phone calls from reporters. You know, Richard, you know, Professor Ingersoll, what do you, you know, isn't there going to be this dramatic surge out? And I said, actually, I doubt it. And in the beginning, and the reason is this, that in economic downtimes, people in general, employees across the economy, do not leave their jobs. Their jobs may be rough, but if there's not options out there, or if there's economic financial uncertainty, they're not going to leave their jobs. So I said, my guess is that we have, the reporters would be surprised. Well, we've heard all this. I'd say, well, we don't have data. And my guess is no. However, when the pandemic starts to reside or decline and the economy improves, my guess is there'll be a big surge because of all these stresses. Now, again, we don't have the data yet, the national data. There are some indications and some surveys have been done, some pilot work or small surveys. RAND did one, Department of Ed, Federal Department of Ed recently did one this winter, and it looks like there's a lot of stresses. So, you know, my guess is that all these stresses that have plagued this occupation for the last half century at least are being exacerbated now. Now, there's a couple of caveats we need to note here. First, not all teacher turnover is bad. Not all employee turnover is bad. I mean, first of all, there's a certain inevitable. We all change jobs and careers. I've had a number of different jobs and occupations before I became a professor. And then professor, I've been at two different universities. So, you know, there's a certain amount of it's just normal. Second of all, there's, let's call it good teacher turnover. There's some people that shouldn't be teachers or they're not doing well in a particular school or setting. So, you know, we don't want to be naive or one-sided here. You know, not all teacher turnover is bad. Not all employee turnover is bad. There's lots of people, researchers, this is maybe particularly in business schools, that do these analyses, the cost benefits of employee turnover in a given industry or a given sector. And, you know, there's some consensus that the good firm both promotes and benefits from some degree of employee turnover, you know, new blood coming in, your lower performers moving out. And on the other hand, there's a general consensus that high levels of employee turnover are not cost-free. And we've had some research on the pros and cons, the costs and benefits of teacher turnover just in the last decade and a half or something. I mean, when I first got into this, there wasn't anyone who looked at that. There was just very little in education, almost as if sort of the assumption was this is cost-free. And it's not. You know, we run these data that there's, you know, almost half of all the teacher turnover in a given year takes place in about a quarter of the schools. And you know, you have schools that lose 20, 25, 30% of their teachers chronically every year. That's not cost-free.
So to conclude our conversation, I want to take you back to your bread and butter, to recruitment and retention. If you were talking to a room full of policymakers, school board members, state-level policymakers, federal policymakers, and they asked you, we're in this world now where we're coming out of the pandemic, you mentioned there will be challenges that arise now that teachers are sort of waking up to a world where they may have other options. There may be reasons now that they want to leave. They're tired after 2 years. So what would you tell them to avoid disaster, to avoid a mass exodus from the teaching force?
I would go back to those data, which are pre-pandemic, that talk about the issue of voice. How much input do those teachers have? So instead of coming up with a policy and an edict from on high and saying, all right, here's what we're going to do, you know, to deal with the pandemic or the aftermath of the pandemic, or if there's cuts in the teaching, whatever, you know, bring the teachers into the discussion, you know, whether it's unionized or not. Seven heads are better than one. This maybe takes a little more time. So that's what I would say. You know, I mean, think of the stresses on teachers. You know, particularly with young students and going remote, I don't understand how it even could work. I mean, how many hours can a seventh grader sit or fifth grader in front of a computer terminal in their home and pay? I mean, the challenge for teaching is always engaging the students. I just think things have probably been really, really difficult the last couple of years. And, you know, the people on the ground have a lot of thoughts, can have a lot of thoughts on how we should move forward, how we should fix this, what should we do, and bringing them into the discussion instead of top-down decision-making. That's what I advise. I've just had, you know, speaking to all these superintendents in Kansas and Missouri, and that's what I advise, you know, bring them in, get their views on how to address all these issues. And I mean, because again, my prediction is we're already seeing, we're going to see a big surge in quitting. Well, you know, that would be my suggestion on how to start to address that. You know, what are the problems here? Why are you quitting? What can we do? What are your suggestions? Which of these cost money, which don't? I mean, because price tag is always an issue, of course. Yeah, that's my suggestion.
In the second half of the episode, Professor Nguyen walks us through some groundbreaking work he and his colleagues, Drs. Chan Lam and Paul Bruno, are conducting to shed light on just how bad the teacher shortage might be.
Why is it so hard to get a sense for whether there are teacher shortages or not?
Yeah, so first, I want to break down that expression, teacher shortage, just a little bit. So we define teacher shortage usually in two main ways. One is thinking about the unfilled teaching positions, or also known as vacancy, right? For some people, it can also mean underqualification. So thinking about, you know, how teachers who don't have standard or regular certifications have provisional certifications, or they're certified, but they're teaching out of their, you know, expertise subject area, like a math teacher teaching English, for instance, right? So I think we should be specific in terms of when we talk about teacher shortage. So in terms of teacher vacancy, the reasons why this is so hard to estimate is that there's no national database for teacher vacancy. And that's something that was very surprising to me when I first started this. I figure there's got to be a place where they collect this information. It turns out that there isn't one. States can and do report shortage areas, but they do not report the raw numbers or the extent to which there is a vacancy. So that, you know, we know that there is a special ed teacher shortage, but we don't know whether or not that's one teacher or 1,000 teachers, right? What we do know is that there seems to be shortages in almost every state, but we don't know exactly how many vacant positions there are. So this is in part why my team, Chen Lim, Paul Bruno, and I, we went to great lengths to try to document this issue.
So how did you and your colleagues approach trying to tackle this question?
So what we did was we systematically examined news report, department and board of education websites and findings, policy reports and briefs, and any publicly available information about teacher vacancy for every state in the United States. So, you know, we have a common search string that we use for every single state. And when we cannot find any information, we then contacted the department or board of education for the data. We also supplement our data with the Common Core of data and then the civil rights data collection.
And so what did you find?
What did we find? Well, we have several key findings. So first, you know, we have 19 states where we have shortage information for last school year, 2021-2022. We have 13 states where we have information from the 2021 school year. And then the 19 states that go back to 2018 or 2020 and before, okay? There are 13 states, however, that we cannot find any information on, and that includes California and New York. I mean, those two, they're large states. They have millions of students, and yet we cannot find any vacancy information for those states. We found that in terms of raw counts that we have ranging from 37th vacant position, this is in Utah last year, to almost 4,000 vacant positions in Florida last year, which is very, very substantial. It's like on a per capita 10,000 student basis, the vacancy rates go as high as 69 teaching positions per 10,000 students in Mississippi, and 41 per 10,000 students in Alabama.
Do you have a sense for how those vacancies might vary across districts within states?
So that is going to be one of the things that we are going to be working on over the next couple of years. So right now, it took us 2 years just to get the information at the state level, right? But the questions that I think a lot of people have, and then that we're really interested in is, how are these vacancies distributed across districts and, you know, for schools? You know, historically, we know that, economically disadvantaged schools, majority minority schools and rural schools have a hard time attracting teachers and keeping them there. We also know that a certain type of teachers, STEM teachers, special ed teachers, bilingual education teachers, there's a big need for them, and we've had a hard time attracting them into the professions. But as of right now, we do not have a good sense of how exactly the vacancy are distributed across district and schools.
Hmm. So when you think about the implications of your work, I know it's hard to say just from raw counts what districts should do or what states should do. But what, for listeners, what are a few things that you would want to highlight for them in terms of where you think policy should go or what policymakers are doing now that might be able to address these issues?
So before we get there, I do want to highlight a couple more things that when we think about this vacancy issue, that it is not uniform across the United States, right? That many states, there are 14 states where they have more than 1,000 vacant positions. There's 16 states that have 2% or higher vacancy rate in their teacher workforce, right? So like Florida and California have almost 9% and 10% of the teaching workforce that are underqualified, meaning that they don't have standard or regular certifications to teach the particular subject in their state. That is substantial. That's critical. We're not talking about just a few dozen teachers missing. We're talking about thousands and thousands of teachers are missing. That means that hundreds and thousands, millions of our kids potentially aren't having the teacher that they need so that they can learn, right? So that is a serious issue for many states in our country. It doesn't mean that every state is experiencing this, right? There are many states like Utah that aren't having this particular issue. There are reports in the news where you see districts are like, oh, we are 100%, have filled all our positions and things like that. So we have to be aware that this is not a uniform issue, that it's very state and district specific. So in terms of thinking about what can policymakers do? So here, I think there are two types of recommendations that we want to think about. One, and this one seems simple, but it's not. It's just data availability. I mean, a big part of this, right, is that we just don't have good educator turnover data, educator vacancy data. A lot of this has to be, people like myself trying to dig this up and trying to do everything we can to get this information. And it shouldn't be that way, right? So we recommend that state policymakers make school level data available, that states can work and support districts to collect information and report it. That would be really helpful because it's hard to make targeted policy decisions, right? If we don't know the extents to which those are problems in your district or in your school. So we need that good data. In terms of policy solutions, I think we have to keep in mind, and this is something that's really difficult for some people to keep in mind, is that we don't have a national teacher labor market, right? We have 50 states. That means you have at least 50, labor markets. And then within each state, there's hundreds of districts. So we're talking about varying amount, difficulty in terms of attracting and recruiting teachers. So we have to be aware of that. So I don't think any sort of blanket solution can work here because we don't have uniform vacancy. Not all subjects are equally, in dire needs here. So we have to make a very targeted policy decisions to meet current demands. Thinking about, poverty, schools in high poverty, rural schools, majority minority school, and specifically for STEM teachers, special ed teachers, bilingual ed teachers. We need to prioritize those areas, whether or not we think about, you know, loan forgiveness or scholarships or sign-up bonus or retention bonus, it has to be targeted because we know from prior research that those are the areas of greatest needs. But, you know, it's really an empirical question as to whether or not those targeted policy incentives will actually increase the teacher supply and increase teachers there, right? The assumptions we're making is that, well, there's this reserve pool of teachers that exist that if we can just incentivize them, that they would join the profession. It's an empirical question. We don't know whether or not it's true. We also think that, oh, if we increase, you know, salary for STEM teachers enough, that STEM graduates would then want to become teachers. We don't know how well that holds up, right? So we need to experiment with this a little bit and see how that holds up. But in terms of like the long-term health of our education system, you know, for our kids and for our students, I think we really absolutely need to increase the respect, the prestige, and salary for all our teachers. Because I don't see how this is going to turn around if we don't make those kind of effort. So teaching is a noble profession, but it does not mean, it should not mean that teachers have to have a second or third jobs, right, to make ends meet.
Thank you again, Professors Ingersoll and Nguyen, for taking the time to talk to us about teacher shortages. As always, thanks for listening. We hope you're safe and healthy. And remember that for the latest analysis on education policy, you should subscribe to the NEPC newsletter at nepc.colorado.edu and follow NEPC on Twitter @NEPCTweet.